it's not an industry where great talent is beating down the door saying, we want to do this. I am maybe overly optimistic. I do feel like if people figure out what an advisor really does, and on the other hand, if millennials really do want to make a difference in the world and in people's lives, this is one of those professions that you can actually do that.
Welcome to Better Conversations, Better Outcomes, presented by BMO Global Asset Management. I'm Ben Jones.
And I'm Emily Larson. On this show, we explore the world of wealth advising from every angle, providing actionable ideas designed to improve outcomes for advisors and their clients.
The views expressed here are those of the participants and not those of BMO Global Asset Management, its affiliates, or subsidiaries.
Today, we're talking about an industry-wide challenge, the challenge of developing the next generation of advisors. Now, it's no secret that the advisor workforce is aging. It's also not shocking that the old ways of recruiting and retaining a very small percentage of the recruits won't be able to meet the future demand for new talent in our industry. However, there is hope, and many in the industry are answering this call. They're challenging the status quo and experimenting with new models of advisor development. These new models are leading to more successful outcomes for this next generation of advisors and the firms that they represent.
You may be one of those new advisors yourself, or you may be a seasoned veteran who's starting to think about succession planning. Whatever the case, we'll set the scene on today's advisor demographics and address some of the barriers to entry for those thinking about getting into the field.
We're also going to talk specifically about one success story called the Advisor Mastery Program from our guest, Matt Ransom, Vice President of New Financial Advisor Development at Raymond James Financial. I had the privilege of sitting down with Matt at his office in St. Petersburg, Florida. As long as I've been in the industry, it seemed that there's been some pretty significant barriers to entry for new advisors to grow up in this business. And I'm really excited to hear about the work that you guys have done. It's been pretty impressive. Raymond James has been really working to figure out how to bring new blood into the business. But it's been pretty top-heavy industry as far as age, and it only seems to be getting worse. So maybe you could first start at a high level and just kind of share some demographics about the advisor industry. Like, where are we at?
Sure. You hear a lot about it. And the term you tend to hear a lot is this silver tsunami that's coming. We looked at a study in 2016 from Ernst & Young that basically said at that point, 55% of advisors were over the age of 50. On the other side of the coin, there's less than 20% that are below the age of 40. When you look at firms like Raymond James, those independent firms, it tends to be a little bit worse, because our advisors tend to be a little bit more experienced because they're breaking away from another firm. And historically, firms like ours haven't done training. So if anything, we've got more advisors that are up in years. And what's different on the independent side, what tends to be different at Raymond James is you own the business, you own the clients. And with that comes that responsibility of what are you going to do next? That leaves us to focus on helping you, the advisor, pass that business on, and there's two ways you can pass it on. You can sell it to somebody else that's a little bit younger that will, you know, the client will be taken care of, you know that the client will have a good experience, or you have somebody that grows up in your process that learns your way of doing business, that you can pass the business on to that individual.
Yeah, we had Rob Goff on talking about succession planning, and it was really fascinating. He mentioned the silver tsunami. When you mentioned that advisors are over the age of 50, in a lot of ways, that looks a lot like their client base, I have to imagine.
Yeah.
And so how much does that factor into a client's decision when they're choosing an advisor?
Yeah, I think clients do pay attention to it. When you're working with somebody to figure out if that's the person that's going to manage your money, you want that person to be with you to and through retirement. You don't necessarily want that person to be retiring at the same time you're retiring. So this concept of teaming and successions become more and more important. Because whether clients admit it or not, it's something they pay attention to.
Now, I had the privilege of hearing you speak a couple of months ago, and I think at the time you had mentioned something like 6% of the AUM, or assets under management, in our business is with advisors under the age of 40.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a troubling stat. I think the industry in general over the years has had a hard time, A, finding good people. It's unfortunately, people don't really know what we as advisors do. And there's this negative perception around the industry. Movies like Wolf of Wall Street don't help that. And then on top of that, the success rates have been terrible. We've quote unquote graduated 10 to 20% of those trainees that have gone on to be successful after 3+ years. So it's challenging to find people that are under the age of 40 that are doing really, really well.
Why are the success rates, why are those barriers to entry so hard for new advisors?
I think it's a couple things. One, we've got this big separation of successful businesses that grew a long time ago, trained 20 and 30 years ago. And because of 2000, 2008, 2009, we have probably a decade of lost financial advisors where not many, if any, trainees made it through those years. And now we've got a new generation coming up. And so we've got, on average, let's say 55-year-old advisors. And let's call them 30 to 35-year-old advisors. And they see this group that's really successful that maybe doesn't come in every day, has earned the right not to need to manage a pipeline and grow anymore because they grow by referrals. And you have a hard time, if you're that 35-year-old, of figuring out what exactly you need to do to become successful. On top of that, things have changed a little bit. We're not opening accounts that are $5,000 in an IRA. We're not opening accounts with CDs or bonds anymore, where we get to allow the client to experience the client experience and then give you more money. Typically, we're opening accounts. You know, think of that 55-year-old advisor. Typically, there's a $250,000 or a $500,000 minimum. So they're trying to teach the trainee what they now know, which is don't waste your time with all these lower end accounts. Don't waste your time doing this, that, or the other. Don't focus on cold calling. Grow by referral. Open larger accounts, which sounds great, but that's not what you did to become successful. So it's really hard when it comes to mindset of a new advisor. One, to have the mindset of what it takes to become successful. On top of that, you hear our successful advisors say things like, oh my gosh, if I had to grow it today, if I had to start from scratch today, I couldn't do it, which I don't believe at all. You'd do it a different way, but you had the mindset to succeed. So there's this negative energy that floats around trainees, and it's really easy to get lost early on.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up because I've heard a lot of younger advisors that listen to this show will write in and ask questions from time to time, and a lot of them say, I'm getting this advice from this guy that I've worked with or that has mentored me a bit, and he's telling me to do these things, but they're not working. Is that because the business has really changed, right? The way that you build credibility and add value to clients has really changed from the, you know, late 80s and early 90s.
Yeah, I feel like the business has changed. And then I'll circle back to, I think the advice that the existing advisors are giving is correct, just correct at a point in time. So the big point that we focus on in our training program is the role of the advisors changed. We've moved from the concept of I am the money manager. I'm the one that has access to the information. I'm going to take what you're trying to achieve. I'm going to build the portfolio, and I'm going to come back and teach you what we did, to the role of relationship manager, where I'm going to go really deep with the client, figure out what their current situation looks like, where their gaps are, highlight those gaps because they typically don't know that they have gaps, and then paint this picture of a future state and try to get somebody there. So those conversations are different than, hey, how much money do you have? What are we going to do with the portfolio? The industry itself is overwhelming. And I think what's hard for new advisors is I'm getting all this great advice. How do I sort it? And when do I use it? So if I get the activity early on and I get new clients and I practice, you know, I get to have conversations with people, even if they're not ideal clients, I'm learning. And then I can refine my business over time and I can take that nugget that that mentor provided me and I can use it earlier than they did. I probably don't want to use it right away because if I only open ideal client accounts right away, I might not be around to get to pare down my book later on.
Now, there's people listening to the show who are new to the business. And, you know, I'm sure they'll take away a lot from the conversation. But for those who are not new to the business, why should they care about this topic?
Yeah. Well, first of all, shout out to the folks that are new. You are not alone. And hopefully, if we get this thing right, you won't be alone for that long. But here's why I think it matters to folks that are on the podcast listening. We just want you to think about what's going to happen to your clients long term. You put a lot of effort and energy into helping them create the life they want, the retirement they want, and you've created the business that you want. So I feel like it's our job, training firms like ours, to help you pass that baton on and make sure that they truly take what you've created, which is something that's gone from an industry that sells widgets to really a noble profession. And that next group that comes in needs to do the same thing. They need to uphold the values and the vision that you've laid out. But quite frankly, they need to help take it to the next level too. You know, I truly believe that we've got the right mentors that will help those folks learn and develop. It's our job to make sure that they actually succeed and are around for that mentorship.
It's amazing. Less than 20% of advisors are younger than age 40. Matt and his team have developed a program called the Advisory Mastery Program, or AMP for short. For those who are unfamiliar, Raymond James Practice Management was recognized as the winner in the Wealth Management Industry Awards back in 2017, which really serves as an indication of their strong track record in this area. So let's explore how AMP works.
AMP, or the Advisor Mastery Program, is a two-year training program for, let's use air quotes here, new financial advisors. Our classes are made up of 50% of the folks are brand new to the business. The other 50% have an industry background but want to become front-facing, client-facing financial advisors. The program itself, again, stretches over 2 years, has three main components. Visits to lovely St. Petersburg. You come here three times. That's a week, the first visit, 4 days the second visit, 3 days the third visit. Those happen at month 6, month 11, and month 18. That's where most training programs start, and unfortunately, it's where most training programs end. We'll come back to what we do in that home office visit, but we feel like that's where the work starts. So the advisor, the new advisor, needs support before and after those visits to the home office, because we know the human mind really only absorbs about 7% of what people say when they're in lecture format. So our job is to support and reinforce the tools that we help advisors learn. We do that through an online distance learning platform that is before and after each visit. That's an interactive distance learning platform that we're on about probably an hour or two a week. And we also do one-on-one coaching, where my team will talk to every advisor in the program every 4 to 6 weeks about what's working, where you're getting stuck, and what are the tools and resources to help you refocus.
You alluded to how the program works. There's three components. There's the home office, distance learning, and coaching. But maybe we could start with the home office. Like, walk us through. There's three visits.
Yeah.
They happen not at the start of the program, but throughout the program. So walk us through this.
Sure. We use the first 6 months to allow people to get licensed, to get up and running, and probably just as important, to shadow an existing advisor. We feel like we in the home office can focus on structure, process, and accountability, but I really want you to sit with and see how your mentor financial advisor interacts with clients and how they speak to people. Just like you'd watch a good reporter if you wanted to be a great reporter, same thing. If you want to be a great financial advisor, study and watch great financial advisors. So we have a recommended shadowing schedule that they follow. Then we use the distance learning to prep what we're going to do in the classroom. And we do feel like our classroom experience is a little different. Let's say it this way. We just like messing with people in class. And so that sounds weird. Let me define that. we're not doing a great job if we're just lecturing in class. So our classroom, every class is about 40 participants. Our job is to teach you a concept, have you role play the concept, then break into small groups and talk about how that went, and then chase that with an existing advisor talking about how they do it. So there's a lot of group work, a lot of interaction, and a lot of uncomfortable moments where new advisors are practicing. Because our philosophy is, you know, practice should be harder than the game. So if you're up practicing this concept or this specific skill with your peers who are more informed than a regular client, and that's hard, then that should be hard. Because then working with the client or prospect should be easy.
Makes a lot of sense. Now, I think at one time I had heard you refer to the first home office business is about confidence.
Correct.
And the second's about clarity, and the third's about community. So what do you mean by that?
So our visits have those different themes. The first visit, our job is to make you confident, and confident in sourcing new conversations. So how do you do that? And then confident that you're able to be effective in those conversations. And the focus in the first home office visit is you're not typically that effective if you're the one doing all the talking. So how do you ask great questions? Then we send you back out in the wild. You try it. Sometimes it works. Some things fail. And you come back 6 months later at month 12. At month 12, it's fascinating because everybody says, hey, Matt, where's the new stuff? And at that point, our job is to pull you out of the whirlwind and refocus. And focus on what's working and what are you doing that's not working? How do we help that get better? So clarity around your process to run your business, right? So then you leave and you're also more confident, but you're confident that you have a process that then you just have to go out and execute day to day on. The third visit happens at month 18. And the fun part about the third visit is we've got now, let's say of the group of 40, we've got about 32 people that are back, and they're all somewhat successful, and they know what they're doing now. And that visit takes on a life of its own because now it's run as a study group where you've got 31 other people that are running businesses and they're growing it in today's environment. So let's talk about it. What are you doing to source your pipeline? How are you growing? How do you work with wholesalers? How do you leverage other advisors and partnerships? Those are the types of conversations we have in the third visit. The third visit's, as you can probably tell by my voice, that's one of the most fun visits we have.
The distance learning work. So that's the second component. Obviously, pre-work, the first 6 months, there's, you know, before you show up at class, but I'm assuming there's post-work. How does the distance learning work?
Yeah, we're having fun with distance learning. So it's not your normal compliance CE. We're spearheading a new concept called gamification. Gamification, simply put, is driving activity and focus through fun on your phone. So we'll do things like issue challenges, how many clarity meetings can you get this week and what's working for you, and give people points and badges by participating in those challenges. We'll also issue a challenge. Okay, you practice your introduction to a strategy meeting in the classroom. Go out, grab your selfie stick, record it on your iPhone, post that back in the online community, and let your classmates weigh in. So I'm sure, as an example, I'll have some of my folks in AMP 6 and beyond that'll listen to this podcast and say, hey, Matt, I noticed you did XYZ. You really need to clean that up. It's where we can help each other get better and say, wow, you use that word here. I got to tell you, that might not go over well with clients. It helps everybody refine their package and really enhance their process.
And the last is coaching. You said you do a lot of one-on-one calls. How do those take place and what's kind of the format? Because coaching is always one of those things that how much is coaching and how much is management and how much is being their friend?
Yeah, it's a tough balance.
It's like therapy, right?
Coaching's hard. It's especially when it comes to family because we have a number of family teams. Coaching is therapy at that point. Our coaching process works like this. Prior to the coaching call, which is a one-on-one with their trainer, the trainee will send in their activity for the month. Here's what I'm doing. And that allows the coach to have a meaningful conversation. So if I've sourced a ton of connection meetings, yet I've only had two clarity meetings, which is in our world the next step, then that means I'm not doing a great job moving from social to business. So then that's something the coach can work on. But as you alluded to, coaching and management are different. So we have different types of conversations. Coaching in our world is asking questions to help the individual realize the problem on their own and then come up with a solution on their own. If you can get somebody to do those two things, the chances that they'll follow through are greatly increased. The challenge is, will you have the patience to allow them to get there? So our coaches have a series of questions they work through to help people uncover their gaps and then own their shortcomings and come up with a plan. Now, they'll point out, hey, that plan's a little ridiculous. What are the chances you'll think that works? But even there, I think you notice that's a question, not, hey, knucklehead, I don't think that'll work. Here's what I think will work. So it's a different process to come up with it. Then afterwards, the trainee will send the recap of the coaching call to their mentor, to the manager, and to the coach. That allows us to figure out if the person's really connecting and owning what they want to work on, and it invites the mentor into the conversation so they can help train that person on the ground too.
What are the components of your training program? Comparing your program with AMP might be a useful way to identify potential gaps. Or if you're thinking about getting into financial advice as a career, hopefully this could help you identify how committed any organization is to your development. So what are the actionable steps that you can take right away? Ben asked Matt about the lessons he's drawn from the program. They also talked about some of the unexpected reverse mentoring that occurs.
There's a couple challenges that come to mind. One is this challenge of wanting to know it all right away. So we talk a lot about embracing the uncomfortable and embracing the awkward. One of the questions we ask existing advisors who are down here with their trainees as part of our mentor workshop, so we're all in the same room. One of the questions we ask is, when do you feel like you'll know it all? And our advisors are very humble and they say, we never know it all. And those that start having them understand that you're constantly going to be in this position where you're asked a question you don't know, you've just got to follow up and follow through. That's where people respect you and you earn their trust. That's a difficult lesson to learn. So we've got to keep pointing people back to, you got to be just okay with where you are right now. The second thing is this focus on process versus product. And this goes back to the knowledge too, but what is your process? If you've defined how you work with people and run a business, then you can go out and execute. And then it's all about the activity. But quite frankly, if you're making it up every day, you've got a real problem. Because then you're just constantly in this state of unknown and flux. The third lesson is, if it matters, you have to keep score. That's something the previous generation did much better than the new generation. We've gotten into this world where, quite frankly, everybody feels good because they've done work. But we don't pay attention to, are we doing the most impactful thing right now? So if you're not keeping score, I think my comment to you might be, then what you're working on may not matter. So let's find out what matters and let's figure out a way to track that. Because we need to know whether or not we've had a successful week, a successful day, or a successful meeting. If we can do that, then we know we can get better next time. If we don't, again, we're just kind of making it up.
I like that a lot, and I'm a big fan of what gets measured gets managed.
Absolutely.
And it's always been something that, if you look at any new advisor or any experienced advisor, at least up until a point, while they're growing their business, they know what the numbers are that drive their business forward.
And what I think you've hit on a key point there. It's those advisors that are successful today did that up to a point, and then probably because they earned the right to, stopped tracking their activity as an example. What's been fun in the program is when they bring on somebody new, there's a lot of reverse mentoring that happens and a lot of energy that's created. So typically what you'll find is that new advisor that's hired, their manager, mentor, business owner will say, okay, all right, that's right, I did this back in the day. If I'm going to have you do it, I'm going to do it. Game on. And you start to see this fun camaraderie start to get built. And the energy in the office just goes up a lot.
Oh, I love that. You mentioned that many of the program participants have some sort of mentor in the program. Is that a requirement? And if somebody out there doesn't have a mentor, how do you suggest they go about getting one?
It is. We feel like you really can't be successful if you don't have other advisors that you can shadow. It's not impossible, but you're behind the eight ball a little bit. So those of you that don't have a mentor, here's what I suggest doing. Use something we call the advice approach. Go out, plan to have X number of conversations with other advisors a week. So that might be one or two within your firm currently, and maybe one or two external that you just say, hey, I'd like to get your advice. I'm newer. I'm starting to build my business. Your name rings a bell in the community. Everybody I've talked to that has worked with you, knows you, respects you, enjoys working with you. Can I just sit with you for 15 minutes, buy you a cup of coffee, and ask your advice around what I should be doing? And when you get in those conversations, have some specific examples of things maybe you're struggling with. So here's one example. What are some of your favorite questions you ask when you're doing deep discovery? How do you tee up the financial planning meeting when you're dealing with a client that's never done financial planning before? If you have those specific examples, then you're allowing that person that's your quote-unquote mentor to easily weigh in and give you some advice. I think at times when we talk about mentorship, it's a little overwhelming because you feel like somebody's going to be meeting with you every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for 2 hours. But if you do the work as that person, that new person that's coming and asking for advice and you have questions prepared, you're just allowing me to do what I like to do, and that's talk about me. So that's easy to do, especially if you're going to buy me a cup of coffee.
So let's talk about results, because this program's put up some pretty impressive results relative to the old, you know, there's 10 of you today and there will be one of you in 3 year lecture that everybody got when they, you know, started in this business 20 years ago. You've really refined this approach. It's clear through, you know, our discussion so far. But for those who are listening who are still saying, well, yeah, this all sounds nice, but does it work? Can you share some of the success of the program?
Sure. And it's something you typically don't hear us talk about a lot publicly. One, because we don't feel like we've arrived. We've got plenty of work to do. And the other is, compared to other firms, our sample size is small. We hire, I think we used that number 300 earlier. You know, that's a drop in the bucket compared to some other big firms that are hiring thousands of trainees a year. But so far, so good. We found that on average, somewhere between 63 to 70% of advisors, and that's team and standalone, which ironically, the retention rates are about the same, graduate the program. So we're around 63 to 70% graduate. And then when you look at about 4 to 5 years out, we're in the 57 to 51% range in terms of people being around and still being advisors. That doesn't count people that have tried this and decided, hey, this is hard. I think maybe I'm going to go back to my home office job, or I'm going to go become a financial planner on a team. When you add those numbers back in, we're right around a little bit north of 60% after 4 years.
So, I mean, you're 2 to 5 times better than, you know, our industry's experience with new advisors.
We feel like the process is working. And I think when you've got the right people, that's really what matters. So what I'd say to those that have tried trainees before, have thought about this and said, oh gosh, it's just too hard. Here's what I'd say. And again, keep in mind, I'm an optimist. It can be done. The challenge is finding the right person and defining what your process is. If you can bring those two things together, you've got a real good chance of pulling this off.
Now, I would love to hear, you know, from cohort one now to, you know, several years later, what are some of the learnings that you've come away with from different cohorts that then you've kind of, you know, evolved the program over time?
Here's what we've learned over the last 5 to 7 years. You've really got to focus. It's real easy to get distracted and focus your training on the next thing, but really focusing on what it takes to find clients, overall what you're going to do with that with the money, so that involves planning and investing, and then what the client experience looks like. If we can define those three things and have a trainee feel confident in their process around those three things, we can help them be successful. If we get distracted by other things that, quite frankly, are fascinating, then you'd probably diminish the odds of somebody succeeding.
I appreciated Matt spending some time with me to explore how to successfully develop that next generation of financial advisors. And in the spirit of staying focused on what matters, I want to recap a couple of points that you could put to use maybe as early as today, whether you're developing a program for your new recruits or you are a new recruit.
First, find out what matters and track it. Ben likes to refer to this as industrial math, but as Peter Drucker said, what gets measured gets managed.
Second, find a mentor in your community and ask them for 15 minutes of their time, or maybe just a cup of coffee. Be prepared with specific questions. If you're the mentor, be open to helping newer advisors in your area so that they can benefit from your experience and wisdom.
Third, remember to remain focused on the key areas of building a practice. How are you finding clients? How are you planning and investing? And what's the client experience like? If you focus on those areas, you'll find more success than just chasing the latest trend. We'll leave you today with Matt's last word.
It's a much needed topic. We're talking about where this industry is and acknowledging that down the line there is going to be a problem and that we're all going to need help getting there, but it's a rewarding profession and it's one that as we pass this on to the next generation, we need to help them realize where this business has come and help them take it to the next level.
And if you were to put a warning label on your advice today, what would your warning label say?
Here's the couple warnings. One, nothing works and everything works. So some of this works for some people and some of it won't work for some people. And I'd say this is hard, as it should be. We're building small businesses across America, and not everybody's successful at that. So we shouldn't expect to see 100% success rates over time. You probably want to be somewhere in that 30 to 50% of strong business owners. If you can get in that sweet spot, I think you're doing a really good job.
How can our listeners learn more about you, your team's work on the subject, follow some of your thoughts?
Yeah, it'd be great. Just follow us on social media. It's M Ransom when you're looking on Twitter. I'd also go to our Raymond James site, follow Raymond James. Most of our content submitted through Raymond James. And you can also go to the Raymond James website to find success stories on AMP and read a little bit more about some of our better folks.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much for taking the time. I really appreciate the generosity.
Our pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Better Conversations, Better Outcomes. This podcast is presented by BMO Global Asset Management. To access the resources discussed in today's show, please visit us at www.bmogam.com/better conversations.
We love feedback and would love to hear what you thought about today's episode. You can send an email to betterconversations@bmo.com.
And we really respond.
We do.
If you thought of someone during today's episode, we would be flattered if you'd take a moment and share this podcast with them. You can listen and subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts or whatever your favorite podcast provider is. And of course, we would very greatly appreciate if you take a moment to rate or review us on that app. This show and resources are supported by a very talented team of dedicated professionals at BMO, including Pat Bordak, Gail Gibson, Matt Perry, Derek Devereaux. The show is edited and produced by Jonah Guile Newfield and Annie Fassler of Puddle Creative. And these are the real people that make the show happen. So thank you. Until next time, I'm Ben Jones.
And I'm Emily Larson. From all of us at BMO Global Asset Management, hoping you have a productive and wonderful week.
The views expressed here are those of the participants and not those of BMO Global Asset Management, its affiliates, or subsidiaries. This is not intended to serve as a complete analysis of every material fact regarding any company, industry, strategy, or security. This presentation may contain forward-looking statements. Investors are cautioned not to place undue reliance on such statements as actual results could vary. This presentation is for general information purposes only and does not constitute investment, legal, or tax advice and is not intended as an endorsement of any specific investment product or service. Individual investors should consult with an investment, legal, and/or tax professional about their personal situation. Past performance is not indicative of future results. results. BMO Asset Management Corp is the investment advisor to the BMO funds. BMO Investment Distributors, LLC is the distributor. Member FINRA SIPC. BMO Asset Management Corp and BMO Investment Distributors are affiliated companies. Further information can be found at www.bmo.com.